that none of us have lived before. So it cannot be business as usual, you know, and ICE cannot just ignore basic dignity and have us being in here where we could be on ankle monitors with our family. There's no reason why they should keep us in here unless profiting from our suffering.
You're calling for Otay Mesa to be shut down, Anthony?
Yes, because we don't have to be here. We all could be home with our family on ankle monitors to fight our cases on the outside. What's the point of being in here if it was just not for profit?
That's immigrant and activist Anthony Alexander speaking to us from inside the Otay Mesa Detention Center near San Diego, California, last week, one of the ICE jails that's been hardest hit by the pandemic. The jail is owned by the private prison company CoreCivic. A mass outbreak there of COVID-19 has infected at least 167 people and led to the death of one man, 57-year-old Carlos Ernesto Escobar Mejia, last month. This comes as the former acting director of ICE, John Sandweg, has joined doctors and human rights advocates and groups calling for the immediate release of people in ICE detention to stop the further spread of COVID-19. In other immigration news, a federal appeals court has struck down President Trump's near-total ban on asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border. That does it for today's show. If you'd like to sign up for our daily digest, you can text the word democracy now, one word, to 66866. That's the word democracy now to 66866. Or you can go to our website at democracynow.org and sign up there. You can also go there for all of our broadcasts, the transcripts, the video, and the audio podcasts. And tell your friends about Democracy Now!, the daily grassroots global news hour. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriano Contreras, and Maria Terracena. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And on KBOO Portland, we now enter a space of live radio during which we bring you the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, right here on your community connection, KBOO. Stay tuned.
We are going to talk science today.
I think we need to talk some science, in fact. Anyway, this is KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm the rational one. That's Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187. You can let me get away with that? That's good. Anyway, it is lockdown radio. It is a sad situation. It is all, I want to make this clear. There is the virus. But the situation this country is in, and Oregon is in, and Arizona is in, and Florida is in, and so on, is directly due to the absolute childish, arrogant stupidity of the man who would be president yet again. This is a Trump folly. And I think one of the easiest ways to explain what's wrong with him, not us, and not the nation, is that he has a child's view of history. He gave speeches. First of all, he gave a speech in what is really the home of the Suyan people in Dakota, and he then gave another speech where he showed us, yes, we have some old airplanes. Let me fly them for you. And he has a lot of people, sycophants and fearful people, I guess people who really desperately need jobs, who just yes him whenever he says any kind of stupid, crazy thing. And Donald Trump says any kind of stupid, crazy thing. And here's the drill on this. When you were in school, I don't know how old you are, all of you out there, but when you were in school, you learned a lot of not history. You learned stuff that Reverend Weems created around George Washington, not that he was a slaveholder, but that he was so honest, and that he cut a cherry tree down, and then he confessed it to his father, and his father didn't, as would be the custom of the time, whip him, but rather praised him for his honesty.
Right? Hey, can I interject something?
Of course.
What, now that we're talking about myths about George Washington,
What?
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just winding up here, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, there's the old saw about how he wore dentures made of wood.
Yeah.
Well, it's true that he wore dentures, but he wore dentures made from the teeth of slaves.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
I wanted to put that in there.
I wonder if he took the teeth out before the slaves were dead.
It was a pretty common practice. It was a pretty common practice for people to have replacement teeth made from teeth that, you know, people weren't using anymore. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. All right. Anyway.
But moving on.
Moving on, right. So here's the President of the United States. Well, the fake President of the United States. And he, among other things, extols the virtues of Christopher Columbus, who, according to him, and I'm going to paraphrase because I can't remember the exact words, discovered America, made America, knew the first guy. Well, first of all, in any geographic understanding, he landed in a place which is now Haiti and the Dominican Republic. He had no idea what lay beyond that. He immediately took slaves of native people who were living their own lives in their own manner and brought them to the king and queen of Spain looking for more reward. And by the way, they didn't even like that. It was a bad scene. But Christopher Columbus is not, I want to repeat that, as significant as we were taught he was when we were in the third grade. And this is really important because this is where Trump's mind dwells at his best. His knowledge of history is in the third grade. So he recites a long litany of heroes, all of which are distorted. He ignores the very fact of the freeing of African Americans in a huge war, a great struggle. By the way, the freeing of those slaves was a byproduct, a strategy of that war, not a particular expression of the right of people to live freely. But never mind. And in doing that, in identifying a mythic picture of America, we get the picture, the real picture, of exactly where Trump's head is at. He's in a fantasy land, and it's not charming. It's a racist land. It's a sexist land. It's a cruel land. It's a land where we always win and we always fight. And it's so frightening to hear him say this and to know that there are millions of people, not a majority, I'm sure, but millions of people who have been taught this in school and now buy into it to hear it from their idiot hero, the so-called President of the United States. It really, really not only makes me angry, it makes me frightened. And here's the most important thing of all of this. He personally made sure that we never would find out how many people had been exposed to the virus. We would never find out how many people were going to be sick. He would never find out how many people are yet going to be sick in the very near future. In other words, here's a problem that was solved very difficultly in Europe, solved even in New York after a bad beginning, and he doesn't even know that that is true. He would rather have us all believe that the virus is going to disappear with the summer warm breezes. And it's so frightening, so angering, and so appalling. This is not leadership. This is fairy dust. And I didn't mean to insult anybody with that statement.
No, you're absolutely right. What he's doing is he's doubling down on what he believes got him to the White House in the first place. You know, he may very well be correct when he estimates that what got him to the White House in the first place was white grievance politics.
Yes.
The painting of the white working class, mostly the non-college educated white working class, as racially aggrieved, as put upon, as victimized by this emerging national order that is seeking to set them aside and devalue what they believe is their ancestral contribution to the health and wealth of the country. He was able to pretty successfully exploit that, along with some very handy episodes of voter suppression, I might add. And so he's doubling down on this now. It's as if he was saying, vote for me, I'm really racist. And the public is saying, hey, no, I don't think so. And they say, no, no, I'm really, really racist. That's his answer. And I really don't know how well it's going to work for him, particularly because, 130,000 Americans have died on his watch, a huge, huge proportion of which did not need to die if he were able to implement even the most rudimentary of nationwide testing and contact tracing programs.
Well, this is true, and interestingly and sadly, the greater number of people dying are people of color and people of Hispanic background, and this is extremely disturbing, and it is not necessary, as you say, and it's going to go on and on and on, because he's actually tying up his staff, his people who might know better, and everyone's afraid of him. They're afraid of this clown. Well, a clown with a big, big baseball bat is still a guy with a big, big baseball bat. And this is the president of the United States today. Unlike many who I might have disagreed with in policy and otherwise, he has no intellectual roots. And I'm not being a snob here. Oh, he didn't go, No, no. This is like common sense intellectual roots, where you begin to examine things as they are claimed to be and discover that, gee, third grade is not the place where all the truth was happening. Not him. He knows that these myths, these ugly, ugly ideas, which do have their roots in the slaughter of Native Americans and the enslavement of people of color, all of that is just fine with some people, enough people, he thinks, to get him elected president of the United States. And I'm going to argue that that's not true. I'm going to argue that because of the combination of the truth of the destruction now being undertaken in America by the virus itself, and because there really is a good root in many people's hearts, and that because of that, I think if everyone will just vote, but there's the rub. Because, for example, a lot of people are going to be afraid to walk into a crowded place to vote. They want to vote by mail. He says, and this is part of his attack on the National Postal Service, no, you can't do that because somebody will cheat. It'll all be wrong. You can't trust the mails. Of course you can. Of course you can. Look at the way voting takes place in Oregon. It's simple, it's easy, and it's cheap. And this is a part of a huge, vast, I won't call it a conspiracy because it's not hidden. It's just simply a bizarre way of seeing the people of America as lacking all knowledge, lacking all intellectual capability, lacking all discernment. And he's counting on that. He really is counting on that, even as people in his own family are starting to fall sick.
It's true. And I think your analysis, Joe, is correct. I think that the formula he has doubled down on, the grievance politics of white America, is not going to get him back to the White House. And we've talked in recent episodes of this program about how whether or not people wear masks or face coverings in public seems to be falling out largely along the fault lines of our cultural divide in this country. And that, up until fairly recently, was true, but the poll data over the past few weeks is showing really a pretty significant swing over to the side of most people wearing masks when they're out in public. According to Pew Research, as of the 23rd of June, about two-thirds of adults are saying that they regularly wear a mask in public. And they're also saying that a majority of people that they see in public are also wearing masks. So that message seems to be getting through. It is now really only the rump of the conservative voting bloc in this country that is still digging in and refusing to wear masks. Unfortunately, that includes the president of the United States.
Oh, no, I don't want him to wear a mask. I want him to go out into the sick communities and render aid unto the people who are sick and die.
Well, that's kind of harsh.
Well, no, it isn't. It isn't harsh. No, this man is responsible for the death of many hundreds of thousands of people. If there were justice and there were a God above who rendered such justice, this dude would be lightninged.
Well, if there were justice, he would end up in jail, and I think that there's a chance that that might happen. But the reason I disagree with you on this is that, you know, there's many ways in which Trump, as president of the United States, could have brought the country around to a path out of this pandemic. Many, many ways, and we've been over many of them on the show, and I don't want to go too far into depth in them right now. But can you think of a simpler, more powerful gesture than the president of the United States appearing on camera, wearing a mask, and telling everybody else to wear a mask and about how important it is, and seeing everybody around him on the podium wearing their masks, and seeing that everywhere he goes, everything he does? There's probably no other single gesture that any one person could make to help turn things around in this country.
Well,
but he won't do it. He will not do it.
He will not do it because his ego is so fragile, his knowledge base is so limited, and his egotistical orientation is so strong that he could not possibly admit that he made a mistake. And in order to do what you're suggesting, which I think would be a nice gesture, I really think it would be a good thing, in order to do that, he'd have to say, oh, you know, I made a mistake, and now we must do this. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if children die, as he has set up many, many children separated from their families at the border. He doesn't care that older people are dying in hospitals. He doesn't care about any of that. What he cares about, what Donald Trump cares about, is his properties and his ego.
Yeah, that's true. And staying out of jail. And I believe he is connected being reelected with staying out of jail.
You think so, he knows he might go to jail?
I think he absolutely knows he might go to jail.
Well, that'll mean he'll do anything, including cheating on an election, to stay out of jail.
Indeed. Well, we know that he has already cheated on one election and was caught trying to cheat on a second election. And, of course, no action was taken to rein him in. So we can say with a pretty high degree of certitude that he is indeed continuing to cheat on the upcoming election. So
I think you're right.
It's true. And given the baked-in structural advantages that conservatives have in our country, not just because we are, you know, a binary two-party system, which is completely inadequate to address the problems of the day, but also because our electoral system favors rural states, which in the modern era, of course, are conservative. So we have these structural problems helping the president on his reelection bid. So what we're looking at is a situation where he needs to be defeated by a margin that's wide enough to put to rest any of the inevitable protests that he and his supporters will bring up. Now imagine, I want everybody to imagine the situation in which Trump loses a very narrow election, okay? And then maybe the margins in some of the key battleground states, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, maybe these are very, very close, much as they were in the 2016 election, only against him rather than for him. You can easily see him contesting the outcome of the election. We've already seen him make several public statements about the inherent fraudulent nature of mail-in ballots. And with more and more states moving towards vote by mail, of course, that only amplifies his platform for contesting those results. So he loses a close election. He refuses to acknowledge the results. He refuses to step aside. And then who knows what might happen after that? There's a scenario by which the election gets thrown to the House of Representatives, in which case the members of the House would vote as to whether to retain Trump or to install Joe Biden as the next president. But here's the thing. Those representatives in Congress don't get to just vote head by head, straight up or down. No, each state gets one vote based on the majority opinion of those representatives. And right now, there are more states with a majority Republican congressional delegation than there are with a majority Democrat congressional delegation. So if it goes to the House of Representatives, it's going to Trump. So he really needs to lose by a wide margin.
I assume he can count. That's the one thing he probably can do. Maybe.
Yeah, he probably can. So expect things to get really, really ugly in the next few months, unlike anything really that we've ever seen. We're already seeing an ongoing and unprecedented series of public demonstrations over the death of George Floyd and in protest against institutional violence against people of color writ large. Those show no signs of ceasing. Trump is already weaponizing that struggle to his advantage, as is entirely predictable, and we're going to continue to see him do that going forward. It's already gotten really ugly. You don't need me to tell you that. You have eyes, you have ears, you've seen and heard everything that he has been saying and his supporters have been saying.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes fall into what I would call a trap, and I may have done it today, by just saying, oh, this is a very ignorant guy who never learned anything beyond the third grade. I think there's a lot more to what you're saying. I think this is in the first time that I really have seen it in the President of the United States, true malign qualities, true evil. And his family is true evil. He comes out of a racist community. He comes out of a very illegal, edgy tradition. His son-in-law's father is in the joint. His whole history is a history of what I would call organized or disorganized crime. And somehow, because he was on TV and could pretend to be the boss of people doing stupid tasks, he became popular. And with that popularity, he got an opportunity to descend a staircase with paid people down below to cheer him as he and his wife went down the stairs in his building. And that was the launching of a career which he thinks may never end until his ascension to heaven.
Well, yeah, why should he think any different, right? He's never been held accountable for any of his actions through his entire life. He's flirted with bankruptcy a number of times. He's declared it a number of times. He even, in the run-up to the election in 2016, settled a $25 million fraud case tied to his fake university. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the guy is a grifter who grifted his way into the biggest job of all, and now he's hoping, as you said, to ride it off into the sunset. But I don't think it's going to work quite so well for Donald Trump.
Well, it will not work if everybody, and I mean everybody, who can vote, votes. But people, there's a lot of splits, I have to say this, A lot of people, very good people, are anxious to get a true progressive into the White House. And frankly, although Biden is tilting to the left, he's not that. He's basically a Democrat, conservative Democrat. I think he's a good man, but I don't think he's the man that you or I would want, or the woman that you or I would want in that position. And this is scary, because it is very possible that people will allow the whole thing to go down to letting Trump win, because it is better to have a horror in there than to compromise on issues which I believe also are very important. There's also something else going on, which is really, really very creepy.
Wait a minute, did you just preemptively blame the left for Trump's re-election?
Yes.
Why? Good Lord, why?
Because
do you really think there's enough people with blinders on the left who are willing to let this guy stay in office to significantly affect the outcome?
I didn't think that. And so actually, I have no good basis for it, so I'll give up on the argument. I don't believe it, really. But I was very disappointed in a show last week, where we had two people, very bright people we often hear on our show because they want to express their opinions, essentially saying, we didn't trust the intelligence community after the nonsense wars in the Middle East. Therefore, we can't trust the intelligence community now when they are willing to tell us the truth about what's going on. And I think that this degree of distrust, this fundamental belief that the system is so corrupt and so evil, will play out very well for Trump. He just wants you to believe there's no point in voting.
Yeah, and he's also trying to keep people from voting. I think, Joe, for you to preemptively point a finger at one side or the other, I think, first of all, that's a mistake. Second of all, you picked the wrong side.
I will agree with you intellectually, but I will tell you emotionally, I am looking at a nation which actually has such weird things as the Boogaloo Boys. We have a nation of 9/10 sensible people, of whom 5/10 may well vote, and then we have all this weird craziness. People who wear Hawaiian shirts and walk around with AKs. I mean, it's a very frightening thing. And I'm merely expressing what I think is a valid anxiety. And I think your criticism of me, by the way, is very valid. However, unless people get off their you-know-what and actually actively persuade others and themselves to vote, this is going to be another disaster.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree. But
you have a more positive view. I know that.
Yes, I do. But I also think that you're casting aspersions on the wrong crowd at this point. But I guess we will find out.
Well, I mean, listen, it isn't about political beliefs. We recently have seen what was a very successful movement of young people, mostly, moving to various neighborhoods to demonstrate for Black Lives Matter and for more progressive efforts in politics and for the honoring of ancestors and so on. We have seen that. But that right now is faltering, even in Portland. And what I saw the last couple of days in downtown was silly. We saw a bunch of silly. And I think the people are going to have to use their minds, and I think they have good minds, to not engage in silly. And that's a new word in my vocabulary. Too much silly.
I do want to get back to the protests here in Portland, but I think we need to talk about COVID-19 some more, because that is...
Oh, the bad news. Wait, there's better on that one. The bad news is that the little teeny particles of COVID are in the air for quite a while.
Well, yeah, that is bad news, yes. But there's also the bad news is that we are setting once again nationwide daily highs in new COVID-19 cases.
Yeah.
Now I've got a few things to say about this, so bear with me.
I'll shut up. I'll be quiet.
Okay. All right. First of all, I want everybody to bear in mind that it's not necessarily helpful to consider the outbreak here in the United States on a nationwide basis. We are an enormous country spread out over a large geographic area with an incredibly diverse population, most of it congregated in cities on the coast. So I think it's more helpful in epidemiological terms to maybe think of what's going on as a series of regional outbreaks rather than a nationwide outbreak. What I'm saying is it makes more sense to compare the United States to, say, the European Union than it does to compare the United States to France or to Germany. Now, what we see now, we're seeing the lagging indicators start to catch up to the actions that were taken several weeks ago with regard to reopening economies, mostly in states in the old Confederacy and in the Sun Belt here in the West. A few weeks have gone by, and indeed, we are seeing the entirely predictable and predicted spike in COVID-19 cases in those areas. We just saw the governor of Arizona late last week issue an order to reclose gyms and bars in that state. We saw the governor of California close up bars again in that state. All of this was predicted and entirely predictable, as I just said, but yet we continue to have this ongoing discussion with ourselves about reopening and when are we going to reopen. We are in the midst of a large-scale deadly pandemic that is out of control. We collectively have no grip on what is happening with this virus. There is no reopening. I want people to understand that unequivocally. There is no reopening. There is only mitigation. There is only mitigation until we are able to corral this thing down to the point where the R-naught value is significantly below one, meaning that fewer and fewer new cases are showing up every day. And only then, with rigorous testing and contact tracing protocols in place, can we even think about approaching something like normality again. We have done none of these things. It is really hard to overstate the degree to which we have collectively screwed this up. This is an error of world historic proportion. See, now, I'm not saying that countries who have dealt with this well are free of COVID-19. They are not. If you take Germany, for example, they saw a resurgence in cases once they started to loosen up social distancing restrictions in their country. But the difference is that Germany had an incredibly robust testing protocol in place, along with correspondingly robust contact tracing protocol in place. So when these cases were flaring up again, they were able to quickly isolate and quarantine people who tested positive, contact people that they had been in contact with, and then again nip this thing in the bud. That's also, we've also seen this happen in China and in South Korea and in Spain and a whole bunch of countries that, that have dealt with this so much better than we have. We have none of this in place. And now we're playing these silly games about, oh, do we close down bars and restaurants again? Or to what extent do we open them again? And we have places like Florida, where the governor of Florida has issued an order that all schools must open to face-to-face instruction this fall, when cases in Florida are spiking. Even the death rate, which Trump has been crowing about going down because of, thank God, it's mostly young people being infected, is even starting to crawl up again in Florida. So we have this insane, insane conversation happening in this country that really has no place in the context of an epidemiological disaster like this. We have screwed this up as royally as humanly possible. And now we're looking at a much, much longer entrenched period of lockdown once again until we can try to get our hands on this thing. We blew the early window in the very early days of the first cases in this country. We blew the early window to get what we needed in place. Then we all decided to get together and buckle down for an extended period of lockdown. And the whole the sole purpose of that was to buy the federal government time to put a national testing and tracing system in place so that we could open up slowly and rationally again and approach something like normal life. We've screwed up that second window also, and now we're heading back in to what can only be another extended period of social isolation at a time when anybody with eyes to see can note that our country is fraying at the seams under the combined social pressure of hundreds of years of racial violence and a deadly pandemic. We are screwed, people, is what I'm trying to say.
A very subtle way of saying that, if I may say so.
You may.
Okay, are you? Is that screed about over?
That screed is about over, Joe.
Okay, I realize that a lot of the things I say may seem existentially absurd, and that in some ways is my purpose. We are in what French philosophers of the post-war era would call an absurd time. That is, for example, all of the leadership under the president now is kind of like puppets, and they are afraid to get him angry, and they will say whatever he wants them to say. And even though there are very good scientists involved, and even though there is a lot of more and more information coming out about the virus and how truly difficult it is to deal with, and that's, I don't want to underestimate that. Even though all that is going on, essentially the voice of the, oh, I'm looking for a word I can use on the air, but the voice of idiocy prevails. I mean, those two speeches this last July 4th weekend were horrendous examples, not only of bad speech making and bad talking, period, bad oratory and bad logic, but they were dangerous because of the lies that were inherent in them, which are repeated over and over again. And one of the things about advertising that I learned, sadly, in my life, you repeat it long enough, people, they'll start arguing about things on the edges, but they'll buy it.
Yeah, they will.
So I don't know. I mean, I still have faith, but you know, there's a karmic. I don't like magic like karma, but there is a karmic thing here. Here is a nation that has taught its children for many, many years that the founding of this country was a blessed event, guided in many cases by God, which in fact is an example of the destruction of native peoples, the enslavement of African Americans, the attacks upon every kind of minority in turn. All of this is real. All of this is not what's mostly taught in school. And all of that adds up to an ignorant population. Not because they want to be ignorant, but because they've been made ignorant, who still are grappling with the notion that America might just be an ordinary accident, and a bad one at that.
Well, I don't want to, we could parse that particular question all day long, but Yeah.
Well,
it's I take your point.
I don't think all is lost. I want to be clear here. I wouldn't be bothering with this show and you and I having dialogue and so on if I thought all was lost. But what is going to be required is extraordinary effort. When Obama, for example, ran his first time for president, even old people like me got out and went door to door talking about how we want this guy to be president. We did it, and I did it, not with the expectation that he was magical or that he had perfect politics, but knowing that he was better than the other choice. And this is where we are. It's now so clear that if this guy gets another 4 years, he'll bury us. He will, as Khrushchev once said, bury us. And we'll be burying ourselves. I mean, we'll be carrying the shovel ourselves.
Boy, that's a grim image.
This is the Abe and Joe show, and I'm Cheerful Charlie. No, my name's Joe.
Cheerful Charlie. This is the Abe and Joe program on KBOO 90.7 FM, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Joe, if it's all right with you, I'd like to transition to the protests here in Portland, if we could.
Yeah,
Before we do that, fellas.
There's a lot of complex things going on there, and I have to admit, I'm not the best person to report on it because I haven't been out enough.
Yeah, likewise. I haven't been out enough either. This is where we're really going to appreciate some listener input, as Joe mentioned.
Speaking of listener input, I've been trying to message you so I wouldn't have to interrupt you like this on the air. But
I haven't seen
there's a couple of folks waiting. I believe, Tom, are you still with us?
Yes.
Go ahead, Tom. You're live.
Hi, Abe and Joe.
Hi.
Hello.
Are you familiar with the term Dada? That came after the First World War from the art community, that it meant nothing. And that's what we do have now in the White House, is the Dada. And that doesn't mean daddy. I don't know whether you saw the documentary a couple of nights ago about Joe McCarthy and Roy Cohen. Did you see that?
No, sure, I did not.
Oh, well. It was a very disruptive course. We've known about that for years, but it showed Roy Cohen almost has a loving homosexual relationship with McCarthy, and his advice, which then became the advice of Donald Trump after McCarthy was destroyed, that never worry about telling the truth. Lie if you need to. Then if it's proven that it's a lie, deny it. And then the very last one was, if you lose, always say that you've won. And so that's what Roy Cohen did with Donald Trump when he was about 27 years old in New York and having a lot of legal trouble, and his father as well, in their real estate dealings. And so we're just seeing this whole thing. But after McCarthy was discredited by the Senate, a lot of them abandoned him. And I think that's a possibility now with Trump. As he, especially the things that he said over the weekend of July 4th, that he made so many outrageous comments, and I think, you know, the senators are probably just wetting their pants. What's going to do for them to have a reelection? That maybe all of the Republican senators might just walk out of the Senate chamber someday and say, we can't do this anymore. It's come to the point where we cannot.
I wish they had the courage of righteousness and the sword of truth and so on. But I don't trust. They're all too damn ambitious and petty.
I heard Susan Collins was thinking about maybe possibly showing some courage sometime soon.
Did she say that?
No, I'm joking. In all of these places where the elections are contested, they're going to see that they're going to go down. And if they would come out with some moral courage and show that their constituents that, you know, we can't do this, maybe that would turn things around a little bit. Just have those Republicans that can't be in their right mind thinking that they're doing the right thing.
Well, I see your point, and I hope that you're being hopeful in saying what you're saying. But my cynical nature and my age and so on and my experience suggests to me that you can almost always depend on the lying creeps to dominate the situation where there's money involved.
I have a family member who is of the opinion that the scandal about bounties on the Russians placing bounties on the heads of American soldiers, that that might be what gives the GOP establishment the cover they need to throw Trump under the bus. But I disagree. I think there's no bottom to this administration, and every time we think we've seen the worst, they go lower and lower.
That's right. Well, keep doing what you do. Okay.
Well, thank you for the call.
And you made a couple of good points. I wish we had a more easy way for people to talk with us. I like the format of Real Talk Radio, and I feel like unless I prepare very formal remarks, I'm saying things that most of you, and I don't know how many of you there really are out there, probably agree with, but have no real means of communicating it to us. And I think. There's part of my thinking is that thank God for Cable and others. Thank God for many, many reporters on CNN, of all places, and MSNBC, and even we've got starting to see people in the right-wing news media turning against Trump. It's very possible that my dark view is simply my personal dark view, and that the reality of the situation can be turned around because we still are a nation of thinking people. I really do believe that. And we are still a nation of people who would like to do the right thing, as Spike Lee once said.
Hey, thank you for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Is it Mick or Karen?
I believe we have Karen on the line. Go ahead, Karen, you're live.
Good morning, Abe, good morning, and Joe. Karen. So I don't disagree with your negative tone about our prospects, but in order to balance things just a tiny bit, I wanted to introduce some good news because you have raised Native Americans a couple of times. So I heard on Amy Goodman's program that a federal judge just shut down the Dakota Access Pipeline pending an extensive environmental review. And such a review, they said, could possibly take years. And this pipeline joins others that have been shut down because primarily of Native American resistance and opposition. She also mentioned that the Atlantic Coast Pipeline just was canceled because of Native American opposition. Duke and Dominion Energy companies did not want to face more opposition as it causes delays and increase in costs. And even better, Native Americans and African Americans worked together to oppose the Duke and Dominion project. They were both in an area designated a, quote, sacrifice zone. So just adding a little positivity. Thank you so much. You have a great day, guys. Bye.
Oh, I'm really glad you reminded us of that. I want to be clear. I really appreciate the victories that are happening, and I really don't. I'm taking the character I take on the radio is probably a little bit more negative than I feel. I have children. They have children. That the world is not definitely going to hell in a handbasket, but I very much have been frightened by the way in which the sycophants of the Republican Party. I used to think of the Republicans as wrong-headed conservatives. No, they are, I can't use the expression, but it begins with suck, and it ends with S. I mean, they really are disappointing and ambitious in the most ugly manner. So I'll shut up for a bit. Do we have silent radio? I don't know.
Well, hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Mick. Good morning. Are you there, Mick? All right, let's go to Brian. Brian, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Is still there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I was. You know, I live out here in East County, kind of on the edges of the metropolis, and, you know, it's got a lot of conservative community out here, and you know, I have to say, I only know peripherally, I think, two people that have contracted COVID, and you know, I haven't seen them firsthand. They, you know, relatives have told us, and so I think there are a lot of people, and I'm not so negative to think that everything that I hear on the news is wrong, but there are a lot of people that believe in the, you know, the left-wing media conspiracy and all that, they don't know anybody that has actually contracted it, so that it doesn't, so to them it doesn't exist and it's all a hoax. And so how do you argue the point that these things we hear on the news about the horrible outbreaks in cities and towns and places across the country, I can't tell them, hey, I know, you know, 10, 20, 100 people that have contacted. I hardly know anybody that has. I just trust the sources like Amy Goodman and other sources that tell me about these outbreaks. How do we deal with that? How do we tell them, no, it's not a conspiracy, it's really happening?
You know, it's almost, what you're saying is almost Shakespearean. Until it strikes your family, until it strikes you or your friends, people you intimately know, and I'm very sympathetic with what you're saying, you end up with a sense of denial, particularly when we have all of us been raised in an advertising nonsense world. So it's really, really hard to tell what's true and what's not true. And the reason why one can work one's way through that is to look at the science, look at what's being discovered about the virus, look at what's really going on in the struggle to make some kind of sense out of it and to deal with it. The two or three things we absolutely now know. The masks, while limitedly valuable, are valuable, really are valuable. The shelter in place, the avoiding of others, even when it's socially kind of sad, really is valuable. And more than that, the patience that it's going to take to wait this thing out is so very important. It's terrible that we have the kind of idiot leadership that we do, but it can serve as a warning. I mean, I'm at the place where I kind of have an evil wish about the president's family. I wish they'd all get good and sick. Well, I'm not sure we've got to know about it.
Everything you're saying relies. You don't know any of this from firsthand knowledge. You don't know the science, and so we have to.
Well, actually, I think I do know. I actually do know the science. I'll disagree with that one, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
you're
but
saying,
I mean, but
a lot of us
you
don't have
done the
a firsthand opportunity to discover the horror of this thing.
So many of these people are in such denial that if, and they have that mindset that if it doesn't impact them absolutely directly, they doubt it, you know, and you can't, how do you convince them otherwise to trust these sources that they don't know, like they know their Uncle Joe or whatever, you know?
Well, I don't know how to answer that one, but I will point out that a lot of people have been thrown out of work by this thing. If it is a vast conspiracy of some, I don't know, left plot or something, it's really complicated and really clever because it's really destroying the economy.
And, of course, what I'm talking about is trying to figure out a way to talk sense to these people, and the hardcore base of Trump land, you're just not going to talk any. Yeah,
well,
I'll give up.
No, I think I understand what you're saying. I mean, I began this screed today with a real sense of doom and gloom. And I know that that is not probably the best way to be. And I think what I'm feeling and what I'm reflecting is a little bit of what you're saying. But I also know, absolutely know, that this thing ain't going to be stopped the way we're doing it.
Yeah. You know, for so many years I thought, here I'm on the left, and I know so many people, especially because of where I live, that are on the right, that it's just like we have the basic same fundamental values. We just have to figure out how to bridge that gap, and that somehow we can talk about it. And over the years, I've figured out that, you know, it's just that it's kind of hopeless. And I'm also starting to think that we really don't have the same values. If somebody could let their politics and ideology get in the way of just common sense caring for others, wait a second, you know, I really don't think that I have this commonality that I used to think I had.
Well, I'm going to tell you a very short story, which is a single story, but it contradicts that in a way. Years and years ago, I was active in the civil rights movement, went to various places that I probably, in my ignorance, shouldn't have been. The activities that I did were nothing compared to the bravery of others, but nevertheless, I had a very stereotypical view of the old Confederacy. I happened with my partner to be driving a U-Drive car. I don't know if they even have those anymore, to go from New York City to L.A. And in the process, because it was winter, we headed south. The car, which is somebody else's car, broke down on a rural road in, I believe it was Georgia. And I said, what to do? Farmer guy comes down the road, you know, really a man who works with his hands, and says, come on over to the house. Let's get you and your woman, let's get you warm. Let's get you set up here. And they were so nice. These people went to so much trouble, and I don't think they were unusual. He helped me to pull apart. He helped me, and he drove me and him into a garage. We had to search through a lot of stuff to find what was needed to the car. Meanwhile, at his home, we were fed. We got a meal. The only cost to that, and I don't believe it's a cost, was that we had a social requirement to join them in their regular prayer at dinner time. But the point I'm making here is that people individually and collectively can be so kind and so reasonable given the proper situation. We were in the classic Bible Belt, and we were the classic sojourner needing help, and we saw the actual carrying out of a tradition coming out of the New Testament. It happened to me, and I'm not looking for somebody on high who did it. I'm looking at the fact that the social structure allowed for that. So the meanness, the anger that I had experienced earlier in struggle on the question of race, it had a different feeling now when somebody was helping me. Now, you could say, well, what if I had been an African-American? Oh, yeah, well, it would have been a different situation. But with the white skin privilege I have, in a situation where I was really needed help, I got that help out of people who I would, in the small C sense, call good Christians. And I still think there is that aspect to our culture. And I still believe that there is a better quality to many people, not because it's America, but because human beings have a positive quality. And while I'm very bitter, and while I'm angry, and while I can't even understand how I understand it, you know, how it happened, but I don't even understand how anyone can believe in the Trump, I do believe that it's very likely that if all of us will just do our duty as citizens this time around and get everybody we know and everybody we don't know to do the same, this will be the end of this foolishness. It won't be the end of the virus, but it will be the end of the foolishness.
Carl, are you still with us?
We have Natano.
I think I may have bored him. I don't know.
All right, let's go to Natano. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello?
Hey, the last caller was kind of fixating on conversion therapy for, you know, these anti-science people that are usually following Agent Orange, but I wouldn't fixate on that group of people because if they want to congregate, if they want to mingle without masks and, you know, take the chances, you know, they're going to be protected somehow, let them do it. Don't waste a whole bunch of energy on trying to convert.
Well, no, see, they're going to try. The reason why you can't just let them do it, aside from the humanity of it, that aspect, the reason why you can't really just let it go is because they're going to be occupying hospital beds and equipment that is going to have to serve people who are trying hard not to get the virus.
Well, I mean, everyone should be required to wear masks in public, but if they want to mingle on their own and congregate and, if it's just confined to one group, then the hospitals can probably handle it.
Well, no, it isn't how an epidemic works, unfortunately. It is not God-guided, let's put it that way. It is fairly random, and it does have causes in behavior. So changing that behavior, trying to get people to understand what an epidemic is and how it works in a society which is remarkably, for its technology, anti-science, is a big challenge, and it really does worry me.
Well, yeah, I just think that if those guys are so hell-bent on just completely disregarding science, then, you know, let them pay the price, even though I know that it's not good, because, I mean, one of our family members died of COVID, so...
Well, you know, I understand your sentiment, but I don't want to let it go. I think people are educatable. I think that people have a better nature, which can be reached. I do believe that this is a fog of confusion and distortion and racism and all kinds of prejudice, sexism and so on. But I feel that it can be broken through by rational discourse and by the organizational efforts of all of us.
Well, you're right again. I'm not going to argue with that.
I'm not right, but I'm sure I'm saying the right thing.
Yeah, I just think...
Hey, Natano. Are you... I'm sorry. Did you have something more to say?
Oh, yeah, I just... You know, I've kind of... There's a guy on YouTube from Peak Prosperity called... or named Chris Martinson. And he's been doing these YouTube updates. And they are so illuminating and so science-based and data-driven that it's just like, I've been watching the guy since January 9th, I think he's been calling this stuff. And everything that he's said was going to happen has happened just exactly like he predicted. And he's really good about like what supplements to take, like zinc sulfate will prevent the RNA from replicating in your cells. And there's all kinds of little tips and stuff like that. But if you want to really get up to date on what's happening in the COVID world, Chris Martinson does the best update that I've found.
Well, that's interesting. There's one other thing I want to add, which is ironic. It turns out that the chiefs of staff of the armed forces of the United States, people with whom on a philosophical basis I have nothing in common, it turns out that they too are turning away from Donald Trump because his cornball opportunism is a threat even to their power, even to their sense of right and wrong.
Right. Yeah. No. It is. Actually kind of disintegrated.
All is not lost. What is lost is in danger is the willingness to fight and struggle and win. It is still true that you have to dare to struggle to win. And this is a real struggle against a real enemy, and the enemy has two fronts. It's the idiocy in the White House and his support group, and it's an implacable.
Let's see if we can thank you, Natano, for the call. Let's get Robbie in before the end. Robbie, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to been going out to the Justice Center almost every night, and if not then, a lot of the marches that the Rose City's been putting on. And I just wanted to comment on the what I think Joe was saying was silly. A lot of people look at these protests and, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, what is that doing? This is silly, you know, or what is this vandalism cause? You know, what's this good for? And Martin Luther King described, you know, marches and protests as the cry for help. I think we need to stop thinking that, you know, every direct action or march is going to fix the problems. And more or less what this is doing is putting the strain on the system. The police budget, the police are having to not pay as much overtime now. I don't know if you're aware, but in L.A., in California, in the L.A. city, they stopped paying. I forget what the term is, but basically they hit all that they could pay their police, and so they're taking their hours away now. At the end of the year, these are methods to apply pressure, and so I think that the only way that these movements lose our, you know, support and our base is by people saying, "Oh, these are silly. What is this doing?" Like in my eyes, you know, I go out there, and you know, we're applying pressure to the system. We're trying to remind people that we're still out there. At the same time, we're putting the pressure on the city being able to fund the police because of our activities. So hopefully this gets addressed faster. And, you know, we don't just get breadcrumbs thrown at us by, you know, Joanne Hardesty saying that this decrease in the increase that we were supposed to get in the police budget is enough. I wanted to bring that up, but and also I really don't think that – I think the biggest thing – in my eyes, the biggest thing that I'm scared about with Donald Trump is how far right he's made the Democratic Party. I mean, Tom Hartman, I don't know if you're aware of him, the liberal talk show head. He had John Bolton on his show. He had John Bolton on his show and was all like super stoked that John Bolton wrote a book that threw Donald Trump under the bus. You know, the Democratic Party was super apologetic and really, you know, they were describing how John McCain was a war hero just because he had a feud with Donald Trump. I mean, he's a war criminal. And ultimately what I see is that Donald Trump just dragged the entire party to the right, the entire, you know, both parties to the right, because we actually considered Elizabeth Warren a progressive. And again, that blows my mind. She was groomed by the Federalist Society when she was a hardcore conservative. She said ICE arrests terrorists. Like, that, this is how far right we've become. And so it just kind of, it's sad. I just try to keep people on point, you know, hey, these marches are going on. Sure. This is what gets stuff done. So I just wanted to say those points. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things there I would disagree with, but it's interesting. The perspective is interesting. My understanding of what's going on downtown at night and elsewhere is very limited. But my observation out of many years of activity is that discipline, I hate this to say this, but it's true, discipline, and a common struggle for love and appreciation works a hell of a lot better than throwing stuff. And what we're really running into now is a lot of pent-up social rage about many perfectly legitimate things, but which have no legitimate expression. And organization and reading and knowledge and exchange of ideas and meetings and talking and all the dull stuff is really important to build a movement that will be, as the caller talks about, truly progressive.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time.